I don't know how I got off on the soldier story, because that's not what I usually put in emotional sobriety, but God's in charge. So we were on depression. So the one thing I wanted to say about the depression I was in, it was bad. And when I say my husband just couldn't go through it, I mean, I wanted to go home so bad. I couldn't stand to be there. I felt like a caged animal. I would pace up and down. I had anxiety attacks. And my husband just thought he married a nut. You know, he thought he married this circuit speaker who was all together. And here I am falling apart. And I wanted to go back to California, and he wanted me to go back to California. And I was on the phone with my sponsor in the bathroom, a secret phone call. I said, "Polly, I just want to come back to Long Beach." And she said, "What?" I said, I can't stand it here. I cannot do this. I just want to come back to Long Beach." And she said, "No." She said, "You made a commitment to marriage as a sober woman. And you weren't 1 year sober or 2 years sober. You know how we do those. You're 15 years sober. You work a program. Now it's time for you to apply these steps in your marriage and the traditions in your marriage." And I said, "Well, Ted wants me to leave." And she goes, she says, "I don't care. If Ted wants out of the marriage, tell Ted he can go." And right then, Ted walked into the bathroom not knowing I'm having a secret conversation. And so I'm looking at him, he's looking at me, and I put the phone down. Polly's still on it. And I said, "I am not leaving this marriage. I made a commitment as a sober woman." "And I'm going to apply the steps in this marriage, and I'm going to apply the traditions in this marriage. And if you want out, you leave." He looks at me and he goes, "But this is my house." And I could hear Polly laughing on the phone. She just had a big belly laugh over that. I started laughing and Ted started laughing, and everything after that got better. You know, it just got better from that point. And we have been married now 20 years. That is a miracle for me. I've never been with anybody. Well, I've been with my sponsor 26 years. But I left my mom when I was 15. I mean, I just don't know what it's like, long relationships. And this man, I love him more and more every day. He is the most, and every girl that knows him knows how wonderful he is. I am so blessed, and it just shows my growth. I can tell where I am in my growth by the men I attract. To attract this man in my life shows I grew quite a bit. So, anyway, and the depression was just lifted. Okay, blame. As a need to assign blame is an attempt to evade our part in adventures of life as they go wrong. With blame, our defects are assigned to others, those imperfect, faltering creatures who, although they may mean well, just can't seem to get it together. If I can convince myself that my troubles are of your making, I am lured into believing that you are to blame for my misfortunes. The other side of that coin is that if my problems really are your fault, I am in real trouble. Usually she says I'm screwed. In order for me to grow and recover, I have to get you to change. Yeah. And I am one who blamed people, places, and things, especially when it came to my childhood. You know, it was all my mom's fault. It was all my first husband's fault. It was all, I mean, nothing. I didn't take responsibility for anything. And in the big book, it's under doctor's opinion, it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That one sentence took me out of blaming people, places, and things. Just that one sentence. I drink because I like the effect. It has nothing to do with all those people, places, and things. And when I really took responsibility for drinking because I liked the effect, I was able to start taking responsibility in every other area of my life. And here it says, solution, a relentless inventory process must go on in our lives. though this process, if we are honest, we will lose through this process. We will not lose sight of the part we play in our problems. By accepting responsibility for ourselves, we are no longer at the mercy of any ill wind that blows. Total abstinence from blame brings miracles of tolerance, grace, rich spiritual rewards reflected in the life of real fulfillment. On page 347 of ODAT can be found the statement, most of which happens to me, good or bad, is self-created. And I have a thing on my mirror in the bathroom, and it says, you're looking at the problem. And that is the honest to God truth. Okay, fear. A few slugs of this emotional distress sends us off into a fit of destructive energy that can disrupt home, family, self, and affairs before sanity is restored. Spiritual progress is paralyzed, and the demons move into our psyche where they live rent-free until driven out. There's something in this writing that I don't agree with, and so that's okay. As I said, God works for us at our own level of understanding. There's something here, it says faith. As faith drains away, it is replaced. As fear drains away, it is replaced with faith, the inner knowledge that God is in charge. Therefore, all is well. Fear can erode our faith if we are slack about our commitment. And we must remember, faith and fear cannot coexist. That doesn't work for me. That does not work for me, and I will explain that to you. Let me see what else it says here. Oh, I got my own solution. It's a big page! Got my own solution. A choice must be made. On page 155 ODAT, it says, we realize peace of mind does not depend on conditions outside us, but those inside us. Okay, what I have written for fear, I have walking through fear is exercising faith. Nowhere in the first 164 pages of the big book does it say you cannot have fear and faith at the same time. What it says is the verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. This is under the fear inventory. All men of faith have courage. And then an old timer pointed out to me, you don't need courage unless you're afraid. Practice courage by walking through fear after doing steps 4 and 5. The fear prayer on page 68 in the big book says we ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he'd have us be. And I'm always directed to work with another person, whether they're in the program or out of the program. Continue to watch for fear in steps 10 and 11. And that's what it says in 10. It says we're to continue watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It says it's not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. And then in step 11, it tells us when to do it at night. It says we do a constructive inventory, not destructive, a constructive inventory. And the very first question is, were you selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid? And there are several questions in that paragraph, and that's how I do my 10th step, even though it's under step 11. In the area where I came from, there used to be a man who would pass out a coin that said fear on one side and faith on the other side, and he would always say, you cannot have fear and faith at the same time. And I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong in my program, because I had worked these steps as hard as I could work these steps. I've had spiritual experiences, but I still had all this fear. I'm a person that comes from panic attacks. I mean, I could drive from my house to my meeting and to work, and I couldn't go any further. If I drove out of the city of Long Beach, I'd have an awful panic attack. It's just something that was really debilitating for me. So anyway, I walked up to this old-timer who'd say you couldn't have fear and faith at the same time, and I said, what am I doing wrong in my program? Why do I still have all this fear? And he told me in the most arrogant, smug way, he said, well, it sounds to me like you haven't taken a thorough third step. I mean, today I know I had taken a thorough third step. For me, the third step is a process. It's not just saying a prayer. For me, the third step is taking the actions. If you're going to do a thorough third step, it's taking the actions of 4 through 9. When I take the actions of 4 through 9, I know I've done a thorough third step. So I went to this other old timer who's instrumental in my sobriety, and I was crying on his shoulder about, I think I was tattling on him, really. He says, I haven't taken a thorough third step. And basically, he's the one who told me, nowhere in the big book does it say you cannot have fear and faith at the same time. And he took me to the fear inventory, and he pointed out that sentence, all men of faith have courage. He's the one that told me, you don't need courage unless you're afraid. Then he took me to the bottom of that paragraph where it gives you that fear prayer. God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. And I'm telling you, the two biggest fears I walked through was getting up here at the podium. I never got up at the podium. I mean, I could share in a circle of people. I couldn't get up at a podium until I was 11 years sober. It was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. And the other was getting on airplanes. People ask, how do you get to be a speaker in AA? I just say, well, be afraid of flying and speaking and turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Just drop kick you out there. So the first time I had to fly to speak at a convention for Alcoholics Anonymous, this woman was going to walk me through this fear and boot me on the plane. And she had an emergency, and so she had to just drop me off. And I'm at LAX, Los Angeles Airport, 6:30 in the morning. And I knew I wasn't going to get on that plane. I started to have a panic attack and my panic attacks are severe, and my legs shake so bad I just can't stand up. I fell back into a chair, and I started to cry, which for me is a release in a panic attack. And so I'm sitting there crying now. I'm not panicking as much. I'm sitting there crying because I know I can't keep this commitment. And then I had an inner voice talk to me. I always know when it's God and when it's me, because it's I, me, me, me. And when it's God, he says, Michael. So, and this voice said, Michael, why don't you get out of yourself and try and help somebody? And it was a shock. I mean, I was shocked. And I'm thinking, this isn't an AA meeting. And then I noticed at the escalator, all these old ladies that were struggling with their bags trying to get up the escalator to where the planes are. Now I'm that old lady. So I just ran over there and I started helping these ladies get their bags up the escalator. And I did that for about a half hour, and it worked really well. And so every time I had to fly, I would report to the escalator like I worked there. And then if we're in turbulence where you can't jump up and say, let me help somebody, I always carry pen and paper with me, and I'll write out the third step prayer, and I'll put somebody else in it. Like I'll say, God, I offer Megan to thee to build with her, to do with her as thou wilt. By the time we land, I have pages and pages of the third step prayer. But we've always landed. So something's working. And this is silly to say this, but I am amazed that planes really fly. I mean, they don't crash. I mean, they really fly. I've been flying now for 25, 24 years, and they really fly. That's amazing to me. Okay, let's see. That last sentence in that paragraph, after you say the prayer, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you'd have me be, then it says, at once we commenced outgrow fear. It doesn't say at once we outgrow fear. It says we commenced to outgrow fear. So I can tell you, I'm 36 years sober and I'm still commencing. And I just know that's okay, because in 10 and 11, it talks about it. I guess a lot of us are going to have to deal with it for a long time, or deal with other things. So after it says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. As fear drains away, it is replaced with faith. The inner knowledge that God is in charge, therefore all is well. Fear can erode our faith if we are slack about our commitment. And we must remember on page 155 of ODAT, it says, we realize peace of mind does not depend on conditions outside of us, but those inside of us. And as I said, my personal opinion is you can have fear and faith at the same time. Because I do. I have fear and faith at the same time. Oh, I'm almost done. You could get the room back in order. Emotional sobriety enables us to carry heavy emotional burdens with relative ease. The more gentle the environment, the less need we feel for self-protection. The more threatening the environment to our feeling of well-being, the greater the timidity and need for self-protection. Our altered perception of reality due to our exposure to the disease of alcoholism can be a tremendous obstacle to emotional growth. Our protective fences became walls of isolation, cutting off experience with people and things. Most of us were convinced we had not succeeded in winning at the excessive competitiveness found in the affairs of our lives. If we felt we had succeeded, then we were really confused at why we could not beat alcohol. Either way, we could not get emotionally comfortable. Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon offer a way out of this dilemma. One given to emotional slips has no way of knowing when the compulsion may assert itself. Emotional sobriety isn't a sometime thing. We can recognize that emotional binges are often involuntary, but always forgivable. We begin to recover from emotional vulnerability when we understand and accept emotions instead of fighting them. When we find constructive ways to express feelings, and when we keep our sense of humor, if you don't have one, get one. Emotional sobriety comes when we accentuate positive emotions. And remember that laughter is healing.